You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And welcome to another edition of the Michigan Football Breakdown, focused on the offense with my man, my guy, Al Borges, breaking it down. And he wanted me to say, I'm not supposed to tell him what you want me to say. He wants me to say, you know, you watch on Mondays for entertainment. You watch on Tuesdays for education, for the correction, for the key. Is that, did I say it right, Al? Did I do you justice?
You did, Sam. That was very well put. There's some certain things that need to be placed in order. I don't think there's any question about that. So this is the day that we do that, Sam.
Well, folks, you know how we do this on the Monday breakdown with Devin. We focus mostly on the quarterback, right? With Al on Tuesdays, we focus on the entire offense. Just so happens this week, though, Al, an inordinate amount of conversation about the quarterback, because we saw some things from him that, you know, are atypical, are not normal. They're atypical for what we have seen from J.J. McCarthy in his Michigan career. He's been largely unflappable. Mm-hmm. Coach Al Borges, by the way, I forgot, you know, you got to give your resume.
Oh, here we go.
Coordinator at Michigan, offensive coordinator at Auburn during the undefeated season, offensive coordinator at UCLA, offensive coordinator at Oregon, Boise State. Did I miss any? Cal. I mean, I could go down the line.
You're not even close. You're about halfway through right now. So this would probably be a pretty good time to stop. Hell, I don't know.
The point is, you know offensive football. You know football, but you know offensive football. And you know quarterbacks. Because, you know, there's the X's and O's to coaching, Al, I've learned from spending so much time with you. And then there's the psychology of coaching. And the psychology of the quarterback is the most unique of all.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be fragile. It can be really fragile. Because now you've played 2 weeks of Shangri-La. I mean, everything was, man, unbelievable now. You have having trouble finding flaws, you know? When I graded him, I gave him an A- the first week, and I was probably just trying to find something wrong. Second week, I didn't see much of anything. But this week, the nature of the position, things are going to come up. Sometimes some unfortunate things. You know, first interception was unfortunate. We're going to detail that. You probably already talked about it some, but it can lead to other stuff. You know, it kind of gets in your head a little bit. And before you know it, another one comes up, and then, oh, man, I got two interceptions. I haven't had two interceptions in a while. And then you start feeling as though you got to make a play that doesn't necessarily need to be made, but you do it anyway because you're not winning by as much as you're supposed to be winning, and I'm not playing as well as I've been playing, nor are the expectations or the expectations of my player such that I feel obligated. And you know, start doing some stuff that are atypical. They're not, you know, but that's how you learn at the position. I mean, guys got to do it. You got to experience. Remember I told you, Sam, years ago, so many things are game specific. You can't get them in practice. You think you can, but the pressure of practice is nowhere near the pressure of 100,000 something odd fans and television and all that. That's a whole different deal. So there was a learning process that went on, but you're looking at a kid that takes this very seriously. I'm not saying he won't make more mistakes. He will. But I think some of the errors that you saw will go away because it's important to him.
Yeah. You also, it's a reminder of the nature of any team sport that has a long season. And especially when you're dealing with college kids, college young men, I should say. Hard to get up for every game, Al. I'm not offering that as an excuse, but, you know, putting it in some, giving it some context to the performance and perspective. I mean, you look at Texas, it was 10-10. And so they just come out beating Alabama, right? It's 10-10 in the fourth quarter against Wyoming.
Yeah, you got a natural hangover there, don't you?
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah. Florida State, they beat LSU, and they're in a nail biter with Boston College. You know, Georgia, defending national champs, they take on a South Carolina team that got bum-rushed by North Carolina. North Carolina sacked them 9 times, Al, and they were in a fight with Georgia. I mean, you go down the line, there were so many games like the one we saw Michigan play again, not making any excuse, but it's that reminder that I just talked about. You know better than me, having coached so many years, not saying you're old, just experience. It's, you're not going to be up every single week for every single game. It's a matter of, you know, can you give them that reminder in a game like this? The importance of bringing your A game every single week, I think it's good to get it out of the way.
Well, I learned something back when I was studying the 49ers offense way back to the late 70s. And when they got good, Bill Walsh had a statement that was really interesting. Now, this is a little more applicable to pro ball, but not college. This does apply in college to a degree. Is he said, if you play 14, they played 14 back then, 14 football games. You can't get up for 14 football games. Can't do it, okay? Now, you can get up for a certain amount of those, like, you know, the rival games and some of the games, you know. But he goes, you got to win more than half of them on talent alone, because the guys are just naturally, it's human nature for guys to have a little bit of a mental, or not a mental, an emotional letdown a little bit, okay? So, and they're playing Bowling Green, where everybody expects them to drill them, right? So that's one, your talent's got to win the game. And it kind of did. At the end of the day, it kind of did win, you know. But you just can't expect to stay at that feverish pitch emotionally every single game, okay? Now, when you get to Ohio State or Michigan State, or, you know, those games, they kind of motivate themselves, Sam. You know what I mean? They kind of motivate themselves. Everybody's talking smack, you being at the top of the list of that. So everybody's kind of fired up naturally. But Bowling Green is not a game that they're going to be at an emotional high. So you got to play. You got to take pride in how you play and win, because basically you're not going to screw it up and you're better than the other team.
Yeah, I want to give Lefty some credit too. Scott Leffler, Sue Campbell, Steve Morrison. I mean, these are all Michigan guys.
Oh, your homeboys. Yeah.
They were. Hey, man, they had those dudes ready to match the emotional intensity that we had seen from Michigan the first 2 weeks.
That's another issue now, Sam. They are fired up to play.
Right.
Okay. So they don't play in. How many times is Bowling Green up playing in front of 100,000 people? How about none? Just one time. Okay. You got a staff that's all got Michigan roots, big time Michigan roots. They're getting them fired up. So they're coming in breathing fire, and you're out there. You're not going through the motions. I'm not going to say that. They weren't doing that. But you are not at an emotional high that you would be maybe in another game. Is that something?
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned at the onset, and we'll get into your broad brush, and I imagine this is what you'll lead off with. Now, JJ, his first 2 weeks, you came out of both games saying, man, Sam, this is a different guy. Just his mm-hmm. footwork, his mechanics, his always in this passing profile as he breaks the pocket. He's taking what the defense gives him every single time. These were things that were just, they felt, they were so routine over the first few weeks. It felt like they were hardwired. Mm-hmm. And then last week against Bowling Green, and you started mm-hmm. to see some reversion to last year.
A little bit, right? It so wasn't,
your broad brush from the game.
Yeah, I don't, I would, there's a couple plays that I had a little deja vu on, but not, I don't know how much that played into what the interceptions and such. I don't know. You know, that I think the first one was unfortunate. There was a structural error there too. That one wasn't all on the quarterback, in my opinion, anyway. And the second one was, he just was obsessed with throwing the ball to CJ when he tried to aerial flinch the guy out, and he didn't pick up the alert, which was roaming down the middle. He had run right by the safety and then threw it kind of late in the middle and behind the guy, and he was covered. And, you know, that was just being a little greedy, I think, or just trying to feed a guy that probably hadn't caught a ball or hadn't caught many yet. So he's trying to, you know, so it was bad. And then the last one was just purely bad discretion, throwing the ball, falling out of bounds.
Wait. But your former quarterback.
Yeah.
Devin Gardner.
Here we go.
He said, we
had to make a play, right? I could hear him right now. I know what he said. I didn't even hear it, but I knew.
Fight out of the dog.
Yeah, I want the dog to do is be smarter, okay? That's what I want. I don't want to take any fight at him. He can fight his brains out, but I want him to be smarter and and Devin knows as well as you do, that was not a good decision. So, you know, a couple of bad ones that hurt them. And then they lost a possession on the kickoff return too, which was a little painful too. Hell, they only, the first team, I think, ran 41 plays or 40,
I think it was 40
plays, something like that. I mean, 40 plays, come on now. They only had 312 yards, was it? You're not going to get a lot more than that with only 40 plays. So, in terms of broad brush perspective, the interception and the turnovers were probably the story of the game from a Michigan perspective. Okay. And they still won big. Okay. It's not like they didn't, they were able to overcome that. A couple of blitz pickups were missed that hurt. Some minor footwork issues reoccurred. But again, I don't know that they were, it isn't something you could say, oh, good. Look, he went right back to it. No. He's still pretty solid. He's fine. But the whole thing, Sam, kind of led to lacking rhythm. You know, I talk about offense. You need a rhythm, man. Get some first downs, get the ball moving. You know, everybody feeling good about themselves. Everybody's touching it. We're running, we're passing. They didn't give them the rhythm that they've had in the first couple of games. And again, you mentioned it. I thought BG played pretty well. I thought they had a pretty good plan. Now, they didn't do it like the first, you know, those blitzes that people have been running to blow up gaps. I had a little bit of that, but it wasn't really. Theirs was more, let's load the box and make them run into a loaded box. And had some movements, but not like some of the other teams. But I thought they played very well. They were motivated. They had a good plan, you know. So, and that really was the story of the game. If the ball isn't turned over as much, I think you got a very similar result, because you could see, Sam, with a 65-72 play game, they're going to rush for 300 yards, because the running game did make a bit of a comeback, particularly with their gap schemes, you know, with the counter and such. I thought it really started looking good. There were some nice looking plays in there. So the story of the game is the turnovers, in my opinion. That's what was the if there's one thing to point at. Four lost possessions on turnovers, a lost touchdown on the first one, the first turnover. You know, they were inside the 5 or 6 yard line right in there. So that's really the story of the game.
Yeah, to me, the play that I'm thinking of when I say reversion, he has some riverboat gambler in him, right? Where he's so physically talented, right? Where he can make a play where other human beings, other quarterbacks can't make a play. And, you know, it felt like as much as he was maybe trying to throw it away on that last interception, it also felt like he was trying to make a play. And that was, for me, when I think of something like last year, it was mostly that play. And he's not, and to be clear, it's not like he's this habitual turnover guy, right? But he can be a guy who early in the year, you saw him, he would run around and try to make a few more plays. He made more plays within the confines of the offense.
Yes.
As the season went on,
exactly.
Right?
He made more plays within the confines of the offense, improv or otherwise, right?
Right. And so, what I want you to address, Al, is getting to that psychology question that I mentioned at the onset, because Jim said something in his press conference. He said, "You don't want to overcoach this guy." So, you know, you had Kay McDowell, Jason Campbell. You had first round quarterbacks and talent like Denard, Devin. Walk me through how you coach a guy about the fine line between aggression and being a little reckless, right? There is a fine line there for a guy this talented. Because the last thing you want to do is sap that aggression from him. That's what I think Jim was getting at yesterday.
No, that's your attack mentality. That doesn't change. If you throw an interception, you get him to the bench, you tell him why he threw the interception, you go back out and attack. Don't start thinking I might throw another interception. Attack mentality, and then just use good judgment. And I use a lot of baseball analogies. Devin never liked that because he didn't play baseball. But I mean, Barry Bonds hit a million home runs for more reasons other than steroids. He tried to hit the ball over the fence when the ball was in the zone where he could hit it over the fence, right? But if the ball wasn't in the zone, you know what he did? He took it, and he took more walks than anybody in the history of baseball. The quarterback's got to swing for the fences. In his mind, I'm swinging for the fences, but I'm not swinging at a pitch in the dirt. You understand? I'm always going to use it. That's what great quarterbacks do. They 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 always have good judgment, but aggressive mentality. I want it. It's not there. Check it down. I want it. It's not there. Move my feet. Make sure I've got people in my vision before I throw the ball. I don't throw the ball falling back or desperately avoiding a sack or running out of bounds. A lot of quarterbacks will tell me, Coach, I was throwing the ball away. I said, listen to me. I heard that for years, okay? I'm throwing the ball away. There are three criteria for throwing a pass away. Three, okay? I finally made it finite, okay? One is you are throwing the ball into the ground, you are throwing the ball clearly out of bounds, or you're throwing the ball over the inline. If the ball doesn't land in any of those areas, you were not throwing the ball away. And if you did, you're lousy at throwing the ball away. We got to get you better at throwing the ball away. So attack, 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 check it down, attack, 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 throw it away, attack, 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 put it where only the good guy can get it with good judgment in a one-on-one situation, but don't stop your attack mentality.
Yeah, and so this is a kid that I know. I am careful to not take for granted what I know about, because I'm really not that concerned. I'm not concerned about how this game is going to affect him. What I'm focused on is, okay, let's just, you know, you don't take for granted that a guy who is so mentally tough and is so talented and takes it so seriously, you don't take it for that it's just going to be okay. You do need to still coach it to the point.
Coach him.
Let's just make sure, not overbearing. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure that everything is okay. And then keep it moving, because I've never believed in a kid more than, or a quarterback more than this kid. Mm-hmm. Like he's that dude. And so he came over after the press conference. He's up there, Al. He's taking responsibility, as he should. He played poorly, mm-hmm. right? So you should take it. And you could feel that it was almost like he felt like he let his team. They won, and here he is feeling like he let his team down, right? You could sense that with him up there. On the stage. But after it was over, and after he's off the mic and he's walking away, he came over and he said, man, this is going to make me a monster. Mm-hmm. This is going to make me a monster. But that wasn't him saying, I wasn't prepared. I wasn't preparing.
No.
That was him saying, this is just going to make my focus that much sharper, mm-hmm. where I won't have a letdown like this again.
Right. And that's, I think, what you're going to get. But here's the deal. As a coach, your job is to critique and fix mistakes, okay? The definition of a bad coach, Sam, is a coach that watches something done wrong and says nothing. The definition of an average coach is a guy that watches something done wrong and tells the player that he did it, what he did wrong. Mm-hmm. But the definition of a good coach is a guy that watches somebody do something wrong and makes him do it right without putting the fire out. Okay, we don't want to put the fire out. We want him, again, like I said, attack mentality, use good judgment. Use good judgment. And there's going to be times where the attack mentality has to be tapered a little bit so that we're not putting our defense in a bad situation or losing possessions or whatever. So where's that line? Show me the play and I'll tell you.
Yeah, so, you know, as a coach, I think you go through the film. Devin was talking about going through the film with you, and he said there's a way to do it, to show a guy what he did wrong and then talk about the why and keep it moving. Don't dwell. But then there are those where it's like, okay, that's not your fault. I'm not saying you give him a complete pass for that first interception, but there are some turnovers that where the blame can be spread. And it felt like that one, as much as blame can be spread for an interception, you could talk about the route. You could talk about the design, maybe, depending on what the route actually was. You talk about the call. The defensive call was great. You talk about the individual play was great. All of those things contributed to the first turnover, to the point where I'm like, hey, man, if I'm a coach, and I've never been, I was like, JJ, hey, man, that's not on you. You know, there are a lot of things that we could have done to help clear that picture up, and plus credit the defense.
Yeah, and you got to take that responsibility too with him sometimes, because sometimes it's not on him. You know, sometimes he's hit because of poor protection. Sometimes, I mean, his interceptions have a million different reasons why they happen, okay? But sometimes it's structural. Sometimes there's something that could have been done from a schematic perspective to help clear up the read, clear up the vision, clear up the decision. Okay. So, you know, see what happened, address what happened, either fix it with the quarterback, fix it with the schemes, and keep the quarterback aggressive. And if you can do that, I think you got it licked. And I don't think that's an issue with this guy. I really don't.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you got to know him. And what I try to convey that, like, you know, the last thing you got to worry about with this player, this dude, is that he's not going to take what, you know, that it was a game they won going away, but he's going to take it seriously to the point where I'm going to be better for it, but he's also not going to dwell on it either. Like, you keep it moving. I'm just, from a coaching perspective, you never want to, talking to you guys, you never want to take it for granted. It's just going to be okay. I don't have to do anything about it. No, you know, just make sure and then grow from it moving forward. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. All this conversation about the quarterback, Al, has kind of made the running game, like you talked about, has kind of made it a footnote. And it shouldn't be, because they took a step. And I really think we saw the emergence of Ladarius Henderson. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think it's hyperbole to say that it was his coming out party. And, you know, he sort of, the competition is now really on now that he got some time, some meaningful snaps during crunch time in the game.
Yeah, I just like his athletic ability. I mean, we looked at him in offseason when he's at Arizona State. He got injured during the season, missed several games. But he looks very athletic, you know. Now, Sam, you mentioned he did not participate in spring, right?
He did not.
Then that I'm sure is a bit of a factor in the, you know, on why he hasn't played as much in recent games. But you got a little sample size this week. Yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more. But he looks athletic. He looks like he's aggressive. He doesn't seem to be – I didn't see anything that I would identify as an assignment error, although, you know, Sherrill may see something that I don't. He knows it much better than I do. I think he's a factor, and I think that little tackle rotation could get a little dicier now, knowing that he is as capable as he is.
Yeah, he the aggression, his aggression in the run game. Look, he's physical. Like, you know, the physicality and athleticism jump out at me with him out there. And so now you're looking for, is he assignment sound? And you just said he was assignment sound as well.
He looked assignment sound, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to start. So, full disclosure, I don't know that. But I'm confident just watching the tape, you know, and having my eyes, what I see, be confirmed by your expert eye. You like it when I call you expert. By your expert eye, Al. Oh, yes, you're an expert, Al, all right?
An expert is in the eyes of the beholder, Sam.
But, you know, you ask people on the inside, it's like, hey, man, am I off base? Saying, man, he played well. It's like, no, you're not off base. He'll play. He'll play meaningful snaps in this game. I don't know if that means he starts, but there will be a rotation with him while the game is still in question. Now, beyond that, because, you know, it was interesting to me that when he went in, they flipped Carson to right tackle. Mm-hmm. So that seems like the rotation right now.
Yeah, that's what I thought was going to happen from the get, to be honest with you. But things happen that you don't know about that dictated what they you know, they know what they're doing now. I mean, I thought that would happen from the beginning because they look natural at those positions. You know what I mean? And I think what's going to happen is the more he plays, the more they're going to want him to play. So, you know, players get in games, their stock either goes up or it goes down. And it usually doesn't stay the same. So, but from what we saw, you know, again, it's not a huge sample size, but it was enough. I see him being in the game more.
Yeah, man. It's one of those deals where I was encouraged. I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot. We're talking so much about the quarterback. Right. Okay. We should. But man, Al, that running game, if you're looking for a sign that they're, you know, taking a step toward the what did he smash? They were smashed last year. They were ground and pound last year. If you're looking for progress in that direction, well, then guess what, man? Guess what? We saw some progress in that direction.
Yeah, we did.
Did we not?
We did. We did. And it was mostly with their gap schemes, but it was everything. I mean, they ran a couple very nice zone plays. They ran an open side zone that we're going to show in the telestrations. They ran a split zone that was really nice. They had a beautiful counter to open the game. I mean, it was just gorgeous. We got a bluff zone in there from JJ carrying the ball. Yeah, I mean, there was some stuff that brought back some memories of last year, you know. Wait,
quick sidebar. Is this made up? Did Jim Harbaugh's on BT, and then somebody just came in and said, now, listen to me, Al. If Jim Harbaugh said that, you're never going to hear the end of it, Al, boy.
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. Jim Harbaugh called you an expert? The head coach is practicing politics, Sam. Well, the business man clearly gets phoned. Yeah, no, I.
don't give me a byline. Don't give me a byline, Al. I'm coming for you, man.
No, you got enough information to be dangerous, Sam. That's your problem. And in these last couple of years, man. Oh, don't mess with Sam Webb. Don't even come near the water cooler when Sam's here, because you fixing to get slam dunked.
Okay? Yeah, man. Yeah. Hey, listen. Back on point though. Look, the running game, the first series of the game, it looked like last year, Al. They went right down the field, and every play was a gash play.
It was. It was pretty impressive. I mean, they started with a counter, right? OH, that picked up, I think, 50 yards or something. I know. Then they ran a nice slot reverse with Donovan, and they ran a little bluff zone, which really looked nice with JJ. And then they ran a dual kick and just knocked their ass right in the end zone. I mean, it was like, it looked like the JVs to start the game. So that was exciting. They didn't call one pass play the first four plays, and every one of them looked good.
Yeah, man, it was shades of last year. And then another thing, just to kind of, you know, close the loop on last week's discussion, the first couple of weeks, remember I asked you a question. So I always ask you about the play calling strategy. You know, it's one thing to play, you know, Madden and call plays like that, right? It's another thing. There's a feel to it. There's a flow to it. You've taught me that. You know, you look at your play sheet and you there's a rhythm to the game. You're reacting to the opponent. Sometimes some things can be lost in that. Yes. And so I asked you about Ronnie Brown and Cadillac Williams. Mm-hmm. Like Cadillac was the guy, Ronnie Brown came back and you went in the game. He hardly got any carries. And it felt like the first couple of weeks, while there was a great focus on making sure they had even touches, Blake and Donovan, 30 to 27 through the first couple of weeks, mm-hmm. Donovan just wasn't in a rhythm. And so I ask you, Al, how can you scheme rhythm? And so you gave a great dissertation on how you do that, how you did it with Cadillac Williams and Ronnie Brown. Right. In our last week, it was very clear that the coaches were thinking along those lines too, because mm-hmm. did you see the difference in the usage plan for Donovan mm-hmm. Edwards?
Yeah, get him off early, get him in rhythm, and get him a series. You know, that was kind of our deal. Script him into certain schematics during the course of the first 15 plays, make sure he's here, he's there. And then on the third series, just let him play halfback, you know, and take Cadillac out, let him rest a little bit. So, and they were doing a lot of that. I wish they'd have had more plays. I think you'd have seen even more of that, Sam, as the game went on, but they just didn't get enough plays run. But you can't let a great player get frustrated, because if he doesn't touch the ball, they're going to get frustrated. So you got to find a way in your plan to see to it that didn't happen. Oh, and incidentally, Madden, if Madden was a measure of my son wipes up the floor with me in Madden. So he should be the offensive coordinator, I think, if that's the barometer.
Oh, hey, man, Madden has made experts out of a whole generation now. You didn't know that?
Oh, no, yeah.
Your biggest critics were Madden people. Didn't you know that?
Oh, yeah. No, you know, the coaches, I know the coaches that helped develop. I know some coaches that helped develop some of the way the plays are called in Madden and all that. Some of those are NFL calls. They call them like NFL teams do. And I know some coaches that were involved in that. So it's fun. I mean, I don't play much because I'm lousy at it. But My son is going to be the next offensive coordinator at Notre Dame. I think if it's Madden,
that's Madden, right?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, so listen, folks, if you have questions for Al, put them in the comments, and we will get them up during the Q&A portion of the show, which is coming up. After we get Al's, you know, he calls it his bitter and his sweet. The bitter and the sweet from the game, and then he gives you the grades as he goes down through each position group and grades them individually. So let's give me your bitter and sweet, Al, and then give me your grades, and then you people in the chat, whether it's on Facebook or YouTube or Twitter, just drop your questions in the comment section, and I'll get as many of them up as I can when we get in the Q&A session with Al. So, Al, bitter and sweet and grades.
Okay. Some of this we've already mentioned. Obviously, the turnovers were without question, the most bitter part and the most costly part of the game. The blitz pickup, there was some errors in some blitz pickup, I think, that were costly, and I'm not sure who's – you know, without knowing who called what, that you can't be certain who those mistakes were by. But there were some times that there was a couple of blitz pickup miss. And a periodic, and again, I don't want to overdo this because I don't think it was that bad, but there was a couple of footwork flaws by JJ that, you know, nothing like it's been, but still there. And then the lack of rhythm, the inability to get into the rhythm of your offense. And again, it goes the residual I think the turnovers, but those were the biggest things that I saw. Okay. The suite was, I liked pretty much the way the O-line played. I thought they played pretty good for the most part. I mean, I think I had them with 17, 18 minuses among five of them. Well, they're more than five of them because Ladarius played a little bit, which not a bad game, even though there were only 40 something odd plays run. The tight ends weren't as good. We haven't got to the grades yet. I'm kind of jumping the gun here. But for the most part, they continue to hit shots, okay, which I was kind of fired up about. Ran the ball better using the counter, the duo, and the splits in the zone place. That was kind of cool. And Corum got 100 yards. You know, we finally got him 100 yards. I think, he'd have had a lot more had it not gone the way it did. We mentioned Ladarius Henderson, who I thought was also a sweet part. Got some playing time, got a chance to show what he can do, and is probably going to be a contributor somewhere down the line. So most of the bitter and the sweet, Sam, are pretty evident. You don't have to dig into it too much. It was what it was. All the fans could see it, and it's all fixable. And the things that happened that some people saw as catastrophic, the final score was not even close. And that's probably a tribute to how good Michigan is. Okay, they're a good football team, and they can make a few mistakes and not fall apart because they have a solid defense that doesn't give up many points or many yards. And that's really nice to know at the end of the day that there is some margin for error, you know. So
grades, Al. Give me your grades.
Grades. Okay, I gave the line a B, a good solid B. I thought they were pretty good for the most part. Again, there were some errors in there. They weren't perfect, but they weren't bad. The tight ends have been playing good the first couple weeks, but I didn't think this was their best game. I gave them a C+. I thought that could have been better. The running backs, I gave a B. They ran hard. They won open field opportunities. I'd have given them an A, but I thought there were a couple of missed pickups, and I think it was a running back issue, but I can't swear to that. Wide receivers were good. They blocked better than they've been blocking. They caught the ball well, created some big plays. I thought they were good, and I gave JJ a CC-. You know, and again, he kept firing away, and I think he still helped them win the football game, even with the turnovers. So you don't give them D's and F's when they're a critical part of your chemistry. So I still wasn't his best game, and I think he'd probably grade himself worse than that. But everything he has can be fixed, easily fixed. Okay. It's just hammering your point home, making sure that he understands when to swing for the fences and when to take a pitch. So I think that's the best assessment I could give of that.
Yeah, but how did you coach Devin on that? He seems like was a hard – see, Devin, it seemed like he was hard to coach him on. Don't swing for the fences every time, Devin.
Oh, no, he's a lot more verbose now after the fact. Than he was at the time. Devin liked playing, and he knew that there was a lot of stuff that was non-negotiable, whether he agreed or not with it. But he was good. Devin wasn't, you know, he's the Monday morning maniac now, Sam, because that's his deal, right? Okay. But for the most part, he's smart, very tough, had to deal with a lot of adversity, and incredibly talented. And he could make some of those plays you're talking about. And so you can understand why his thinking is the way it is.
So I'll start off the questions here. And if you have questions for Al, put them in the comment section. So let's just talk about how did you coach a quarterback on what a throwaway is? Because JJ said he was throwing the ball away. Devin seemed to think, he was trying to make a play. Seems like it's a little bit of a gray area. So Coach Borges,
there's no
quarterbacks. What constituted throwing away the ball?
Okay, well, I had to mention this. I'm going to say it again. And the evolution of this is that I would get into sessions, and we'd go over the tape, and I would tell them the ball get intercepted or almost get intercepted or whatever. And so often the quarterback would come back, well, coach, I was just trying to throw that ball away. And my first year or so, I kind of said, oh, okay, just trying to throw the ball. And then the same thing kept happening. And after a while, I started watching bullshit.
See, now I got to find a bleep. I got to find, play this on the radio. Now I got to find this section in there, Al, so we can put a bleep in there. Thanks, Al, but go ahead.
I don't know any other. I could have been said it more diplomatically, but that wasn't what I wanted. That would not have expressed how I felt about it. But anyway, so what I did is I went back over all the interceptions, and I looked over all the balls that were thrown away. You know, I don't want to pull anything out. I want to make sure, well, before I express a coaching point, that they know what I mean. So we set the criteria this way. A throwaway. What is the definition of a throwaway? So when I'm in a film session, if it doesn't come under one of these, you weren't throwing the ball away. You're trying to hit a receiver, okay? You're making what I call a panic throw, okay? All right. Number one is you can throw the ball away into the ground. That's fine. If it's near a receiver, you won't get penalized. You're good. Okay. Number two, you can throw the ball out of bounds to players on the flank. And even if you're back then, they didn't have a rule, but now they do. If you're out of the pocket, you can throw the ball away out of bounds as long as it's past the line of scrimmage, right? So I says, if the ball can be thrown away if it's clearly out of bounds. Okay. And number three, if we're inside the 20-yard line, you can use the end line to throw the ball away. Seldom, if ever, will you ever get an intentional grounding throwing a ball away over the end line. So that was the three basic criteria for a throwaway. So if the ball landed on the field or even near on the field, you were not trying to throw the ball. You're trying to complete the pass. You're trying to make a miracle, okay? Okay. So that just, all that did is it gave the quarterback a clear cut understanding of what a throwaway was and what the expectations of that was. So I could grade them in a definitive fashion.
So for you, that was not a throwaway then.
No, that didn't make the thing. The guy intercepted the ball in bounds. Okay. That doesn't make the throwaway list. Okay. And who knows, maybe he was and didn't understand what the criteria. I mean, not all coaches do it the same way. I mean, this was something I came up with. So,
well, this thing, it was not ambiguous for JJ. It seemed he said, "I can't do that."
No, he knew he made a mistake. I mean, that's obviously the result told him that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. All right, let's get to the questions from the people. If you have questions for Al Borges, put them in the comment section. I'll get as many of them up as I can. This one from Nala says, question for Al. From a coach perspective, what would you tell your quarterback, JJ, to come back to normal? How to bring back the old JJ? Well, he's not that far gone. It's like only if this is a new JJ, he's only been here for 1 week.
Yeah, he hasn't died and go to hell here. He's doing all right still. I mean, he got a couple interceptions. We don't want to panic on that. But I think we talked about earlier is just to tell him stay aggressive, but be smart. And that's really the end of the day. Be smart about using good judgment, particularly out of the pocket, because that's, you know, a lot of times when you're out of the pocket and you're trying to buy time to make a throw, you almost feel compelled to have to release the ball for a big play, particularly if you need a first down. So you just got to use good judgment. I don't want to put the fire out. That's the biggest thing, is make sure they stay aggressive. So I'm not happy about the interceptions, but I'm not going to make it so he's so scared to meet with me on Sunday that he's going to be afraid to be aggressive. That's probably the best way to say that.
All right, let's get to the next one. Okay, so before I put this up, I'm going to say, Mark, calm down. Mark French, calm down, man. 3-0. They won 31-6. The quarterback your team had an off game, still won 31-6. It's gonna be all right. But he said the offensive line rotation, lack thereof, non-existence of Donovan and Colston a month in are concerns. A third of the season is over this weekend. Rod Moore and Will not being around. Problems exist. At least the offensive portion of that, Al, can you address? Are you concerned about the offensive line rotation? Do you feel like Donovan and Colston are concerns at this point?
I'm not worried about either one of them. Donovan is, again, when you get more snaps, I think, and you saw in this last game, Donovan's going to be more involved. With only 41 snaps, he's only going to be involved so much, okay, particularly when you're still trying to feed Corum. Colston has still been a factor. He's made a couple of plays, a couple of very nice plays. And again, I think the more snaps you get, the more he's going to be a factor. So I don't worry too much about that. When you talk about the offensive line rotation, that would be the one I think that would get my attention the most, in that I don't like rotating offensive line. But because they have so many nice alternatives, after three games, you'd like to kind of settle into the five you want to play and let them acquire some chemistry so they can play in concert. That would be the one thing that I think is legitimate. But I think all those other things will work themselves out as there's more snaps.
Okay. Yeah, look, to his point. So Mark is looking at Donovan toward the end of last year and looking at the beginning of this year. And it's different. It is. So I want to acknowledge that. It's not like, you know, what you're saying is completely out of bounds about, hey, they need to, there's some things to work on, but it's not, I mean, it's not panic time. And they started to address it. Like, you can see a tangible approach to getting him on track. And I think it's just a matter of time. I mean, like you said, Al, if you play a normal number of snaps, they rush for over 300 yards, and who knows what Donovan's portion of that is going to be, right? Because he's going to get more touches. They played 43 snaps last week, though.
Yeah, and they have, Sam, in three games, they played 62, 62, and 43. That's all the reps without the twos in there.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's just not a lot of plays, and it's going to reflect how much these rule changes are going to matter. I mentioned that in the first show. They're going to matter in terms of touches. So you got to be real judicious about you go about when you put together a game plan and make sure the people you want to touch the ball get to touch the ball. So
here is a great one, Al. You'll love this question because it taps into your expertise, right? And we kind of touched on it a little bit already. So Tyler W. wants to know, Al, how do you call plays when your QB isn't seeing things like you expected? Now, let me set this up a little further. And I think this question is not just based on what we saw from JJ over the weekend. It's Devin yesterday said, man, I never told Al Borges this. He still calls you coach. You never told Coach Borges this, but I hamstrung him as a play caller at UConn. He said, man, I made his job really, really hard because I just wasn't seeing it. He was calling plays that he knew I knew like the back of my hand, and I wasn't hitting them. I hamstrung him as a play caller. So given that as some context here to that question, how, to go back to Tyler's question, do you call plays when your quarterback isn't seeing things like you expected?
Yeah, and sometimes it's not seeing them. It's just sometimes they're dealing with some accuracy issues. That can happen. And it's happened to almost every quarterback that's ever played the position. I remember listening to Steve Young talk years back. He was, I think they're playing Seattle, and he couldn't hit a cow in the ass with a bass fiddle. I mean, it was bad. Okay. He just was missing throws. And he went to the sideline and he told the court, he goes,
what did you just say?
He goes, what? Will you stop? Okay, he says, call stick routes. I can hit stick routes. So that's how Steve got back in rhythm. They just changed the formation, kept calling stick routes, and he got back in rhythm. Now, in Devin's situation, see, the thing he had with Devin could run. So, and when I remember talking to him on the phone that night, and he says, Coach, I'm not doing it. He goes, run me, have me run. And I said, all right. Let's do that. We're going to throw some passes in here somewhere now. He goes, all right. He goes, let's emphasize run. And to his credit, we busted the game open, okay, when he audibled against a blitz to a speed option and pitched the ball to Fitz Toussaint, who ran for a touchdown. So what he did is the game was a lot closer than it should have been, but we won the game because – we and he featured the other things he was capable of doing in the game. Okay. Would we have liked to clobber UConn? Heck yeah, we would have. But we got out of there with a win because we didn't try and force the issue too much.
Okay. All right. So, but he did hamstring you. I'm surprised you didn't take that opportunity. You didn't take an opportunity against Devin Carter.
Yeah. He told you what happened in the game. He was just not feeling it, but it's not. Hey, let's just – 2 weeks later, he threw for 500 and something odd yards. Yeah. I mean, so this is not something that can happen. But it happens to quarterbacks. They're just not in rhythm. They're not feeling it. You know what I mean? He had missed a pass that he never misses. He threw – we had a pass we called H2X post where if you wanted a completion, get the ball on the right hash mark, come off a play action and throw the bang eight off a play action. He hit that thing with it, and he didn't have to look at it. He could throw it. And he missed it. And I go, oh, my God, he's not doing too good tonight. We got to find something here, you know. And so you know, like I say, it happens. You try and get him the passes that you know they can hit, but sometimes that doesn't work either. So you got to feature another part of their skill set.
All right. Let's jump back into the questions. So this was something that I think has been making rounds. I think it was Michael Barrett's dad who watches the stream, by the way. You might see Mike Barrett Sr. show up here time, but he mentioned that Donovan, really both backs, they kind of played they kind of treated them with the red jersey during camp. I mean, they run really banging them around like we've seen in past years. He held them out for a portion of camp. And so it says with Donovan being out or basically being, you know, limited during camp by design, wouldn't it take him longer to get back into the flow? Might that be part of what we're seeing here, Al?
It can. Yeah, it can. Because we did the same thing with Cadillac and Ronnie. We didn't want to get them hurt. I mean, they were going on their senior year and they were both going to get drafted. And we wanted to make sure that we were very, very judicious about how we went about them taking live reps. You know what I mean? We had them do a bunch of stuff that wasn't live so they could continue to go through the mechanic of the running game and the passing game. But we don't want them to hit much. Now, usually the downside to that with a running back is sometimes they'll fumble because they haven't, not that they're fumblers, but because they haven't been hit in a while. Just that jolt is, you're relearning how to carry the ball, but that hasn't really shown up. But in answer to that question is that can happen. At this point, I don't think that's a factor anymore because they've played a couple games and I think everybody's, had the game reps enough to where they should be, they should be good to go.
All right. We got a couple of questions here about a 2-minute offense and going tempo. And it's a strategy question. Should Michigan increase tempo more often when opponents have their sub packages in against Michigan's two back set? Seems like a missed opportunity to keep the defense at a disadvantage. What say you, Al Borges?
Well, that's a valid point. If it fits into your culture, and Michigan can go fast. They do it all the time particularly when they want to run a wedge play. Like if they hit an explosive play, get inside the 5-yard line or right away, they won't huddle. They'll just line up because they can pretty much run their wedge play in almost any grouping that they have. And so they do have that ability, but just bear in mind that the culture of this football team is not fast offense. It is not fast offense. They are a ball control run play action team. And yeah, they drop back too, but that's really the meat and potatoes of their offense. As a changeup occasionally, it's nice to have that in, that, the ability to do that. But for the most part, they don't take that approach. And unless they're going to make, a drastic departure from what they have done forever, I don't think you're going to see much of that. But it is, the question's a good question because it does force people to keep personnel on the field that may not be able to handle the guys you got. So, but I wouldn't hold my breath until you saw a lot of that.
So here's one. Mark is still panicking a little bit. I'm going to try to sum.
We got to calm Mark down here.
We got to calm Mark down. Somebody
get some water on Mark.
Give Mark a drink. Mark French. He says, and I'll rephrase this question. But he says Miles Hinton doesn't seem to have the footwork and pad level to be consistent yet in hitting a ceiling. Barnhart seems better on the right side. Henderson wasn't around for spring to get chemistry. So. Here's how I want to wrap that question in a nutshell. Give for me, based on your film study and even study of Henderson before he got here, what are the strengths you see of each of Michigan's guys? So Carson, let's start with the guys who have been starting this year. Give me Carson's strengths. Give me Miles Hinton's strengths. Give me Ladarius Henderson's strengths. And then also want to know what you think of Trente Jones. Because obviously on the outside looking in for that trio that seems to be battling right now mostly for the starting spot, it'd be wrong to write them off at this point. So give me the strengths of each guy as you see them.
Well, yeah, start with Trente, okay? Trente, I think, would be starting on a lot of other teams. He is, I think, very strong. He can be a very physical player, okay? Has good feet, can hold the point, does not get – push back if there's a fault. And again, I'm going more by last year because I saw more snaps last year. He will occasionally have an error, a mistake it wasn't a blatant, it wouldn't happen habitually, but it was there. And in the coach's mind, they don't like that now. Assignment errors, some guys don't just have too many of those and it'll get you on the bench. But I really like Trente Jones. Hinton is a good pass protector, okay? Playing at Stanford, he probably learned that from day one. Not as solid in the run game as I think probably Barnhart is. Does not make a lot of – appear to not make very many assignment errors. But in terms of having to recover off twists and things in a run game, he's not as quick to do it, okay? But he is powerful and he is athletic. And I think is a good, solid player. Barnhart, again, I said this from the beginning, I think he's more suited to the right side, but may fit on the left side for him right now, So they're doing what they feel they have to do. Barnhart, I don't see as athletic as Ladarius, for example, but virtually no assignment errors, completely solid. Okay. Which for the coach, that bodes well. You know, you don't have to worry about him turning some guy loose because they stem their front and slanted or something, and he didn't step with the right foot or target the right guy. And now all of a sudden your back or your quarterback gets blown up in the backfield. That's not going to happen with him. So I think he's very solid that way. He's more athletic than you think he is. Okay. And he's a very capable player that just, he doesn't have a lot of bad grades because he doesn't do a lot of bad things. Ladarius to me probably has the most upside. Okay. He's big, he's long, his feet move quickly. He doesn't get pushed around. He is able to recover off blocks quickly. You know, if for some reason he does step too much, he's able to recover quickly to put himself back in position to make the block, whether it's run or pass. I don't see a lot of deficiencies in him from a physical perspective. I think he can do a lot of things. His downside, obviously, is he has not worked with the other guys as much, not being through spring football. Hence, there could be some chemistry issues there, and I can certainly understand that too. But that's how I evaluated him. And I mean, I'm not the personnel guru of the world, but I have looked at him, particularly a guy like Barnhart, who I've looked at for 2 years now. So I think that's pretty much how I feel about him.
All right, so I missed these questions. R2 said, what's a bass fiddle, Al? Cameron Diggs said, couldn't hit a what?
Bass fiddle's a big old fiddle. It's a big, like a bass. You know, the guy, never mind. You know how the dude plays it? Usually in a country band, the guy's playing. That's a big old deal. And if you can't hit a cow in the ass with that, man, you can't hit nothing. All right?
All right. Here's another really, really good question. And I wonder how you would react if you were coaching right now. John Mackle says, Al, do you think new clock rules should impact play calling?
Boy. Well, it does, particularly in you know, it does, period. Does it affect how I would call the game? Everything in the game is situational, okay? So, you know, is it going to make a difference in how I call third down? No, I'm going to call a play that's going to hopefully get 7 yards, or 7 yards that you need. If you're inside the five-yard line and you want to put a short yardage group in, I'm not going to worry about the clock unless there's very, very little time left to do it. So not a ton, but as the clock plays into that situational football, yes, it does make a difference because you are running less plays. It really, what it does, Sam, probably affects more your game planning, knowing that guys like Donovan got to touch the ball a lot, right? And that there's going to be less plays. So we got to make sure early in the game we find him touches before we run out of time, right? So it can. Yeah, it can. But I think the planning is the number one thing, and then just dealing with the scenarios and seeing how the clock affects those.
All right. Here's another one. I don't know if you've been in a situation. Al, do you think Sherrone being head coach and offensive coordinator impacted the offensive rhythm? I think I should ask this question, but I think, I think he leaned on Kirk a little bit during the game as well. I have to verify that, but Al, would that affect him? I mean, we see head coaches that are play callers, though.
Oh, sure. Yeah, but they do it all the time. You know, it's something you do all day. It's their, again, I talk about their culture. If that's their modus operandi, that's what they do, you know. I don't know, if he was the head coach all the time trying to do that, I think it might. But doing it just in the one game, I'm betting he just wore both hats. When he had to call the game, he's wearing that hat, and they asked him if they wanted to go for it on fourth down, then he wore that hat. But I don't think, based on the fact that it's a temporary thing, that it probably had much impact.
All right, this is the last one. Apologies for not being able to get to all the questions. We'll make sure that we try to squeeze in a few more next week. But Jay Makaha Fitz says, Al, is it easier to hone a quarterback back in after a 3-pick game or versus if they're going on a tear and playing unbelievable?
No, it's not easier to rein him in after a 3-pick game. I'd much rather coach a confident player, you know, and 3 picks did not bode for good confidence. But that's why we've already talked about this at nauseam. You got to make sure that he doesn't lose that confidence. But I'd much rather coach a guy that believes he can do no wrong, you know, and then iron out the wrinkles as you go, than a guy that's not sure, you know. I don't, just don't think he's at that point. I think, you know, now if this happened, you know, this was more, if it was a trend, then I would be more concerned. But I don't think so. I don't think it's an issue. And I think this next game will, you know, will get you, we'll tell that tale, you know.
Al, I think they're going to make t-shirts. Cow in the ass with the face middle. I think they're going to make t-shirts about that one, man. Yeah, all right. I'll squeeze one more in because this is just such a good one from Lightline on the way out. It says, Al, what offensive unit needs to improve the most in your estimation and in what area?
I would say the offensive line has to gel as five players together, okay? And once they do, the team will take off because they got so much – talent at all the other positions, they'll just go. But I think they just have to gel. I hate to even say improve. By gelling, they will improve. I guess that's a residual of gelling. But I think that they have to gel by playing together, okay? Because it's such a chemistry position. I mean, it's the guy next to you knowing what the guy next to him's doing and the guy next to him's doing and making the calls, blocking the fronts. You know, there's just so many things that go into that. You know, a lot of margin for error with five guys, you know. So that's the one team, that's the one position that I'm sure Sharon will get them going. And we've already seen signs of it already. So I'm not really concerned about it.
So Al, preview the film study, the upcoming film study that we are about to do and release coming up here in a couple of days. But the focus, some of the plays that we are going to break down, kind of highlight them for the people?
Well, we're going to see the interceptions. We have to address the interceptions. I mean, we got to look and see what our take on it is. And remember now, there's stuff going on out there sometimes that I don't know, you know, and the fans don't know, you know, certain deals. You got to, you know, we just project what we think has happened based on our experience. That's what we do. Doesn't mean it absolutely is what happened, because there may be a coach to watch this and say, no, that didn't happen, blah, 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 because that's what I do, okay? So just understand that. And then let's look at – we always look at some of the compelling plays, you know, the bluff zone, the first play of the game. I told the fans last week that, you know, when they go to the water cooler, they're going to know everything there is to know about a counter, because we're going to detail the counter play like it's right out of the playbook, Sam. How much time do we spend on that damn counterplay, huh?
Oh, I mean, my God.
We're going to talk about that. I mean, look at the guy, that dude's guy can't see that little worm walk up to you and say, they can run the counter. And say, you know why? Because they didn't get the deuce block. And the guy looks at you, what's a deuce block? Well, if you'd watched the show, you'd know what a deuce block is, okay? So, you know, we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about, you know, again, some of the compelling plays. But I think it'll be good. I think it'll be it's not all Shangri-La this week. You know, there's a few deals. But
Hey look, that's what we do. We don't just – it's not all sunshine and rainbows.
No,
we
talk about the good and the bad. No, Sam, no. We got sometimes it's just not all you want it to be, and you can't deny it. Deny it's not a river in Africa, man. We gotta make sure everybody understands why. We do why.
Denial.
This is where all the BS goes
denial
to
Biden. Denial is not a
river. Denial is not a river in Africa, Sam. Didn't I say that? I mean,
that's
say
not
that.
What you said.
Well, whatever. Okay, you got the idea. But this is where all the BS goes to die. We know that. So we're going to allow, you know, let people not only hear it from us, but also see it in the telestration. So,
all right. So to preview a couple of things, we got the film study with Al. We put up all the film studies on Wednesday. So film study with Devin, Vance, and Al all go up on Wednesday. So, but later today, we have the breakdown with Vance that's live at 5:30. So bookmark that or set your reminder, whatever you have to do. And then on Wednesdays at 3:00, that is going to be the new and official time for Steady Dropping Dimes. That is the all sports show with Devin Gardner and Daniel Horton. We talk a lot of NFL. Last week we talked a lot of Michigan State. We talk NBA. We go across the gamut. So it's an all sports show where we get a chance to kind of flex a little bit on some other topics other than Michigan. So looking forward to the third episode and the first in the official time slot. That's Wednesdays at 3 o'clock. So if you're interested in that, be sure to set your reminder. Until next time, folks.
Sam, don't forget to blot out my BS deal, okay? Because I don't want people to think I have cavalier language.
You do have cavalier language.
Oh, Sam, stop it.
You do. I mean, if people only knew. Good grief. I mean, my ears from spending hours
Wait a minute, Sam. There's a couple times. Next time I go, I'm going to bring a bar of soap so I can wash your mouth out because you don't talk like Sister Mary, okay?
You're right. That's why it's off air. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of the Michigan Football Breakdown focused on the offense with Al Borges. We'll see you next time.
Go Blue.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2. Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to Paramount+ to try it free. Terms apply.